Welcome to the Space Show, presented at this time every week by the Space Association of Australia.
Hello, my name is Michael Abdillah, and I'll be your Capcom for this evening. While in Mission Control tonight, we have the dynamic duo, Mark and Mark, who are working the panel. Thanks, guys. It's been another big week in space news, and we've got another jam-packed program tonight. We're going to review the week in space, but we were going to cross live to Florida to speak to Andrew Rennie, our intrepid reporter who's covering the STS-131 shuttle mission. However, Andrew has the luck to be viewing the rollout of the next shuttle orbiter, the STS-132 mission, with the Atlantis orbiter. So it's being rolled out as we speak from the vehicle assembly building to Pad 39A in preparation for its launch, hopefully on May 14. So as a result of that, we won't have the opportunity to speak with Andrew tonight, which is unfortunate, because he's had a jam-packed week. He tells us he's had a close encounter with a US president.
Really?
Indeed. And there'll be more about that story tonight, but also his version of things will have to wait for another evening. He also had a close encounter with an astronaut with a strong connection to the moon, and another astronaut with a strong connection to Australia. So,
did he have a close encounter with the third kind, Michael?
It was definitely contact. It was of the third kind.
Okay. Excellent.
So I'm hoping that some interesting interviews will come up in future weeks, but we will have some information about some of those things that he was involved in tonight's show. The other big news, of course, is that the STS-131 mission that Andrew is in the States to cover has in fact landed safely at the Kennedy Space Center today. And so what I'm proposing to do instead of speaking with Andrew is that we will play the post-landing briefing that took place, obviously after the landing, with the press and media, including Andrew, at the Kennedy Space Center. So we'll play that later in the show when we would have been normally talking with Andrew. Okay, we might go into tonight's show and begin with.
It's an Obama speech.
It's an Obama speech. So perhaps we'll just play that and we'll take it from there.
Okay.
So let me start by being extremely clear. I am 100% committed to the mission of NASA and its future. Because broadening our capabilities in space will continue to serve our society in ways that we can scarcely imagine. Because exploration will once more inspire wonder in a new generation, sparking passions and launching careers. And because ultimately, if we fail to press forward in the pursuit of discovery, we are seeding our future and we are seeding that essential element of the American character.
Okay, that was President Obama addressing NASA employees and specially chosen members of the media at the Kennedy Space Center last Thursday. But despite the lofty rhetoric that you would have heard there, there are still some people in the space industry and within NASA, ex-astronauts and so on, who aren't quite happy with the direction that the president has taken in terms of the U.S. Space program. So President Obama promised not only a commitment to the space program, but he has promised an extra $6 billion over the next 5 years to the NASA budget, $3 billion of which will be earmarked for the development of a heavy lift vehicle, which should be hopefully ready by about 2015. He also promised other hundreds of thousands of dollars to help keep jobs and help the space coast in Florida, which is going to be adversely affected, obviously, if the program is diminished in any way. So those were some of the key points. And what we might do is go to a report from the Voice of America, which highlights some of the other measures that the President mentioned, and also, and more importantly, to gauge some of the reaction to the President's words.
President Obama came to Kennedy Space Center to defend his decision to cancel the Constellation program to return humans to the moon and to outline his vision of broader space exploration.
The point is, what we're looking for is not just to continue on the same path, we want to leap into the future. We want major breakthroughs, a transformative agenda for NASA.
The president called for an increase in NASA's budget by $6 billion over the next 5 years, with $3 billion devoted to research on a heavy-lift rocket. He also addressed worries of job losses in Florida by announcing a $40 million government initiative for the area. And he outlined what he called the next chapter in U.S. space leadership.
We'll start by sending astronauts to an asteroid for the first time in history. By the mid-2030s, I believe we can send humans to orbit Mars and return them safely to Earth. And a landing on Mars will follow. And I expect to be around to see it.
President Obama faces criticism in Congress and within the space community for the changes. Neil Armstrong, the first man to walk on the moon, says canceling the Constellation program is devastating and threatens the U.S. status as the world's leader in space exploration. But NASA Administrator Charles Bolden, a former astronaut, says the president is seeking to help the agency to fulfill new dreams.
To come true, dreams need to be tested in the crucible of practicality, trial, and error. They need to be calibrated and thought through in painstaking detail so that all the pieces are certain to work together. In this case, to lift us physically, and I dare say emotionally and even spiritually, into the deep frontier, the star-studded universe that all of us are so anxious to explore.
Mr. Obama recalled Armstrong's first moon landing in 1969 and challenged the agency to build upon that historic mission.
It wasn't just the greatest achievement in NASA's history, it was one of the greatest achievements in human history. And the question for us now is whether that was the beginning of something or the end of something. I choose to believe it was only the beginning.
The president said nobody is more committed to manned spaceflight and human exploration of space than he is. But he said it must be done in a smart way by breaking with past ways of doing things to make getting to space easier and more affordable. Dan Robinson, VOA News, the White House.
Okay, that was the Voice of America's report on President Obama's visit to the Kennedy Space Center. I was hoping to get first-hand reactions from Andrew, of course, tonight, to see what people were really feeling.
What have you heard? That what the reception was like?
Well, I think it's a bit mixed. Certainly, the NASA administration themselves is peddling the party line, I suppose, and supporting the president and saying the president is really trying to help us and so on. So publicly that's what they're saying. But there are still murmurings that, you know, we should be going back to the moon first and that we shouldn't be worried with near-Earth asteroids and things like that in the first instance.
So, okay.
Because that's one of the things that the president spoke about was, why go back to the moon when we've already been there, done that. He wants some new bold initiative, and one of the stepping stones to Mars was the idea of landing people on an
exactly.
asteroid.
Yeah.
So,
do you think he's done that because he wants something to be remembered by? Do you think it's an ego thing?
Well, possibly. I mean, he's that kind of a president. He's very, you know, people have commented that parts of his speech, and if you listen to it in its entirety, parts of his speech were a little bit Kennedy-esque and a little bit reminiscent of the famous speech by John Kennedy, where he said that, you know, we'd land a man on the moon, return him safely to the Earth within 10 years or by the end of the decade. And I think that what Obama and the administration seem to want, well, that's to say the president's administration, not necessarily the NASA administration, is that he seems to be after something as profound and as important or significant as that, and he's not too keen on going back over old ground. But there are still those in the space community, particularly ex-astronauts and so on, Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, and others, who favour returning to the moon, certainly as a stepping stone to Mars and so on. But
what I was going to ask is, why do you think that it's taken so long for us to have not gone back to the moon?
Well, that's a good question. One of the reasons is that basically the technology, while technology has advanced, the technology to put together the Saturn V rocket and all the spacecraft and all of that got us to the moon in the first place, it would be a monumental task to ramp up the factories and the industry and to reclaim all of that knowledge. And you know, if you wanted to literally rebuild the Apollo program, it would be, you know, virtually impossible, and certainly a monumental task. You know, the original Apollo program cost in the order of $24 billion or so to put a man on the moon. In today's money, you can imagine how much that would be.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that's part of the reason. I don't claim to know the real reason or any other reasons, but certainly that's part of it.
Do you think it's hard to justify the expenditure on that when there's, like, they come out of recession and...
Yeah. Well,
do you think that's why he possibly is doing it as well, or
possibly? I guess there is a need for budget restraint, and perhaps. But then again, on the other hand, he did announce an increase to the budget of $6 billion over the next 5 years. So it's almost a little bit of mixed messages in some respects, but certainly he was very keen to impress upon NASA and the media there that he was committed to the space program, and that indeed his commitment was just such that he wanted something bold and new, and he didn't want to go back to the future.
Potentially, I think it was the Bush administration that started this program.
That's correct.
Yeah,
that's correct.
That's something he didn't want to continue.
Well, there's probably some political considerations in there as well. So, so it's still an interesting state of affairs, and it will be very interesting to see exactly which way things go. Anyway, we better move on. Okay, what I thought we'd do now, in lieu of our cross to Andrew live in Florida, I thought we would play the STS-131 mission post-landing briefing, which took place earlier today, and we might go into that now. That goes for about 24 minutes, so we might cut into that at some point and take you out. But I think that will give us a good rundown of the mission. And what I suggest you do is listen carefully for an Australian Kiwi accent. That will be our man Andrew asking a question, if indeed he did get a chance to ask a question. I don't know if he did or not, but he is present at the briefing, so
cool.
Let's listen for that accent. Let's go.
Welcome to this post-landing news.
Here we go.
Bit of a delay.
Mission to the International Space Station. Joining us here at NASA's Kennedy Space Center are three briefers who will give us the latest on Endeavour's 15-day flight following this morning's landing. First off, we have NASA Space Shuttle Launch Integration Manager Mike Moses.
Good afternoon.
To his left, we have the Executive Director for the Japan Aerospace Exploration Agency, Dr. Kunaki Shiraki. And finally, we have the STS-131 Launch Director, Pete Nikolenko.
Morning.
We'll open this up to for statements and then questions and turn it immediately over to you, sir.
Andrew Rennie, Southern FM, Australia. Had you flown the first re-entry opportunity today down the eastern seaboard of the United States, how close to the cross-range performance of the shuttle would you that have pushed you?
Oh, I don't know what the cross-range for that first rev was.
I don't recall either.
Yeah. I don't know the answer.
Michelle Spitzer with Florida Today. You touched on this a bit, but can you talk a little bit more about this time and how it's jam-packed with Discovery landing, getting ready for Atlantis? Are there times when your crew's just, how are we fitting all this in? Or
let's see, Pete, why don't you take that one from a
sure. It, it's a busy time, but it's all standard work, and it's all very manageable. All the teams that we have are experienced, and personally, everybody that I saw on the website.
Okay, that was the post-landing briefing at NASA.
And Andrew did get a question
and
in.
That
was fantastic.
That was brilliant. And did you notice something, guys?
What's that?
They weren't able to answer his question.
Does that not surprise you, Michael?
with the utmost of respect, no, it doesn't surprise me at all.
That's brilliant. A classic.
But it's unfortunate because it would have been nice to hear
the
response and then possibly a follow-up question from Andrew. But
it was a good plug for Southern FM.
Good plug for Southern FM.
Internationally.
Indeed.
That's right. So there you go.
That's excellent.
Southern FM is now what's known internationally already.
On the world map.
That's right.
Now it's a NASA.
Yes.
And he'll be remembered too, because they couldn't actually answer his question.
That's right.
Which is good.
That's right. So anyone from Melbourne, Australia, will have a hard time when they go there next because of Andrew.
We're coming to the end of the show now. I just wanted to make mention of coming up next. We've got Purple Haze with Mark in the host seat, and he's doing a special on Fleetwood Mac rumours this week.
Oh, cool!
Sounds good.
So stay tuned for that.
And if any listeners want to follow up with Andrew's travels, the Space Association of Australia meets at the Oakley RSL on the first Thursday of the month at about 6:30. From 6:30. Come along and get first-hand reports from Andrew.